Welcome to Brand Jack. This is a podcast. I'm Jack Polinsky, and each week we're going to share an insight to help you elevate the value of your brand and take the vapor and turn it into value. Hello and welcome back to our podcast. Today we want to talk to you about what we believe is the next brand economy. And I've got Paul Martina, our senior marketing brand strategist, with me today. G'day, Paul.
G'day.
And really start to flesh out the idea that is there a new brand economy before us? Are we entering into a new brand generation in the world? And we've got some thoughts and some ideas we'd like to share with you around that today.
Absolutely.
One of the things is that if there is the next brand agenda, how can we understand it to create the next competitive advantage for our businesses, our personal brand profiles, as well as the organizations that we work within?
And I think it's really interesting the changes, the way people perceive brand. Everybody talks about brand now. They talk about a politician's brand, a party's brand, a country's brand. Everything has a brand, but those brands that are successful have something different.
So it was an interesting metric you just shared with me before we started recording about brand, the value of brands.
Yeah, I was reading a statistic about the largest economies in the world, and that of the 100 top economies in the world, 50 of them are companies. So companies that have surpassed the economies of entire countries, it's amazing. And the ones that do that because they do something different.
What do you think that is?
Well, when you ask people the question, what is your favorite brand and why, the same names come up all the time. And you have to wonder, what is it that drives it? What is it that creates that connection? One of the core things that's changing the world and the way we behave is the digitization of brand, the digitization of business and the way we communicate. There's a book called The Story Wars that really defines this very well. When a brand can effectively define its story, who are the heroes? Who are the villains? What is your key reason for existing? You become a more powerful brand. Apple is not a brand about computers.
No, it's not. They sell MP3 players, computers, and phones, but we all understand that they're actually creators of objects of desire. That's their passion. That's what they're delivering to the world, and that's what we turn to them for. The next iPhone, the next laptop, the next MP3 player that gets released better be an object of desire that everyone wants globally, equally, amongst all the cultures of the world. An object of desire needs to be presented. Otherwise, Apple isn't delivering on its brand promise and its share price will be affected. That's the kind of impact this kind of behavior has on a brand internationally.
And every time that happens, it comes up in the press. You see the changes. Google has surpassed Apple as the world's most valuable brand. Google is actually controlling the way we tell stories. By defining how we tell stories and as a brand then deliver upon them, that's how we're going to create a new economy of brand. Pushing it beyond just what we say to what we do, behave, how we interact, and how we deliver on that promise.
So I have a little bit of a cunning plan today, and I'm really trying to shape this conversation into an end point. Do you think that these brands are preeminent and grow at such astronomically successful levels, lofty heights and high virtues they're held to? Do you think there's an element of the market establishing a trust relationship with these brands that creates that potential growth?
Absolutely. If you look at some of the biggest brands in the world, Microsoft is a great example. They have had, as I read in a recent press release, passionate discussions about whether they should rename Internet Explorer. Because Internet Explorer 6 lost the market's trust. When they lost the market's trust, we're now on Internet Explorer 10 or 11. and people are still not trusting it. They've moved away from what was the largest browser in the world because they lost trust.
It's interesting that organizations like Google have a fundamental brand credo manifesto that is all about doing no wrong,
do no harm,
do no harm,
do no evil.
That's right, do no evil, and that actually holds them to a much higher virtue in terms of how we expect them to perform as brands in the market. If Google start to break that fundamental position and promise, we start to lose trust. So my point of asking that question was this, that I really believe that we are entering a new era, the next brand economy, and that brand economy is around the issue of building, managing, sustaining, and delivering trust brands into the world. Those brands who understand who they are and can deliver to their brand promise with zealot consistency, passion, and a commitment to the standard that that promise delivers, build a trust relationship with their market. Those who manage to do that with consistency, still innovate, and give people something they're passionate about or desire, will grow and succeed.
And that all starts from effectively mapping what that is internally. What is your truth? Mm. If your people don't understand it and believe it, you'll never achieve it.
Mm.
Back in the, showing my age, but in the 80s, when Pepsi actually started to gain some ground on Coke, there was a lot of reasons, but one of them is because internally they changed their mission statement. They started talking about themselves as the world's foremost promotion company. They weren't about soda. They were about promotions, big events. And when they started talking about themselves that way, the people in the organization behaved different.
Mm.
When they started to behave different, there might have been a few more fistfights in the grocery stores trying to get shelf space, but it pushed Pepsi further up the rankings of market share.
That's an interesting story because I've experienced recently a slightly different version of that to the negative rather than the positive. There's a global brand called Burger King, which everyone knows. In Australia, we know it as Hungry Jack's. It's pretty much the same format, but through a trademark issue, they got named Hungry Jack's in Australia when they first came into this market. But for the last 16 years or so, Hungry Jack's have delivered one brand promise to the market with consistency, and they whisper it to you like it's a secret every night on TV. You know, the burgers are better at Hungry Jack's is their tagline. It's their brand promise. They recently changed it, evolved it in an attempt to perhaps better communicate the diversity of product or product options that they were delivering. I mean, they're competing against cafe burger joints that are selling chicken, that are selling coffee, that are basically selling breakfast experiences. So they changed it to a statement that was delivered as, we make it better. So we make everything better. We make your life better. We make the food better. It was a way of changing their fundamental brand promise. The interesting thing is they've changed it back. The market wanted to trust and responded more passionately to their fundamental promise of the burgers are better at Hungry Jack's. People wanted and built a trust relationship with that positioning. And Hungry Jack's tried to change it. Didn't work. They've had to change it back. And they've gone back now at 6 o'clock every night on TV. You'll hear them say it with consistency. So, you know, we've come from a world where we learnt about brand as product, which then over the years has evolved into the sort of economy of relationship branding. And as professional service firms, as SME businesses start to grow, you know, relationships are the cornerstone of building a great business. So developing relationship building strategies for your brand were very, very important. What we're talking about here today is the new economy, and that is the idea that there is a trust brand economy heading our way. And how are we going to mobilize our brands to actually respond to that opportunity? So, Paul, in your experience, not looking at the high end of the world, but looking at the working into the world, and you know, the SMEs, the people that are the mainstream foundation of our communities, building businesses every day, how do you think this will affect them?
I think we're already seeing it. I was involved with a company that was in accommodation marketing, targeting the bargain basement accommodation in Holidays, and they were seen as that. They were actually, part of their name was the word discount. And so when the customers from that club went to a resort, they were treated like discount customers, and they responded in kind. They were the bogans at the restaurant or the resorts. They were the people that caused all the noise and dramas. But when we changed the
defined
name...
Defined as a stereotype and a demographic, right?
Absolutely. Mm. So the resort owners grew to not want those customers, even though they desperately needed them. But when we changed the brand and it wasn't about discount, it was about affordable, but it was a trust brand that you could go to those resorts and get a good experience. And we elevated those people from just discount seekers to members. They became part of a trusted organization that the resorts treated better. And then the resorts started saying to us, do you know, you've got the best customers in the market. We never have a problem with your customers.
Simply by changing the language.
Changing the language and changing the belief that what we're providing is a trusted service to trusted resorts and trusted members.
Because I've heard you talk about this before, I know there's more to that story. What impact did it have internally? So you've articulated really nicely the impact it had externally to external stakeholders, partners, channel partners, and the end user, the client. But what about the people working within the organization? What difference did it make?
There was around about a 30% increase in productivity from the sales floor. 120 reservation officers and salespeople that within 6 weeks of the rebrand felt better about their job and themselves, to the point where we took pictures of the ladies on the phone who were not models and didn't see themselves as models, but became models in the catalog of the resorts. And people were happy to call up and speak to the Tracy, who was a single mom with 3 kids, just a normal person as our spokesperson in the magazine. And the retention of staff went up, the productivity went up, morale went up.
Real people selling real holidays to real destinations that create a real experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you think, Paul, is the key driver from your experience that you could share with us that drives and creates that trust bond?
We talk about it in 4 steps.
Mm.
We define who we're going to be to the market. We align the tools to it, and then we implement it as behaviors that everybody understands and agrees on.
Yeah.
Once you've empowered the staff, once they were empowered to talk about themselves in a different way, they started to deliver better results. So from the start, understanding the brand to how you implement it on the ground needs to be a consistent system. Yeah. You need to build a behavioral process to deliver on brand every time.
So interesting, you know, going beyond that now, that understanding that we've just described and explored, is the idea of we now no longer work in a closed community. We are part of a global village, and we need to understand that our brands are being seen far beyond where we think they're being seen. So the messages we're delivering have an opportunity to resonate, and you know, building a behavior and a culture around a promise can actually create relationships that don't immediately convert into sales, but actually give the world something. Give someone something that create multiple connections globally that can quite easily come back to help build and develop an amazing opportunity. You know, we've seen so many clients who have simply taken the time to communicate what else they do through a behavior. The one I'm thinking of is a particular client that is in the science field. They're water ecologists, and one of the things that they did was to truly show and prove that they had a passion for what they did, they actually started sharing insights. The insights were connected to a behavior that one of the directors of the company was engaged in. He would travel the world and go to exotic locations. He was an avid, passionate trail bike rider. And he would go and ride his bike through the back blocks of Bolivia on a major adventure. What we realized was there was an opportunity for him to actually add a commentary, to come back from those trips and share an experience with his community, the people that bought water ecology solutions from his business. And we called them water wisdoms. So he would share an insight from, you know, how water was being managed in Bolivia when he came back. And here, by the way, here are some shots of this great trip I've just done. What that would do was allow that information to not only be sent to his customers, to his clients, but propagated around the community of people who shared his passion. They then developed a greater sense of trust, built trust relationship with him as a professional and his organization. What that did was dislodge an opportunity for projects he never dreamt of getting or even understood that he had an opportunity to get.
And it also created a situation where people started reading things that they wouldn't have read before. Because he sent them real stories about real life that had real interest, they thought, well, whatever he sends me, I'm going to have a quick scan of. So then when he sent out a story that was about the dredging in the, you know, the northern Queensland coal areas and what that was doing to the economy or the ecology, people would read that and suddenly realize, oh, wait, you do estuarine ecology as well as freshwater.
And in this particular instance, you know, he was securing a project value from that particular market of, say, you know, $30,000 a year in project commissions and opportunities to provide his services and solutions. That behavior dislodged an opportunity because all of a sudden people realized that he could do far more than saltwater ecology. He could do estuarine and port authority ecology reporting, and he landed a $300,000 project on the back of sharing his passion for water wisdoms. But the reason he was able to do that was he had invested in and built a brand of trust, a trust that he was passionately committed and connected to the world of water and the science around it.
And the next thing that happened, he started getting phone calls from other scientists who were like-minded and weren't just the geeks we think of when we think of scientists. They were people with real lives that wanted to connect to something that they could trust and be passionate about.
So there's that word real again. You know, we talk in the tourism... being really authentic about why you do what you do. And that is the key to unlocking and delivering the trust brand economy. And those brands who understand that it's not about selling first, it's about giving first. What do you have to give? And it's not always about giving product. It's not about giving something that's going to damage your bottom line and giving things away, but giving people a gift that connects to their desires. You have a passion for what you do, and it's a reason why you do every day. But your market has a desire. You do not create that desire. It exists. You have to find a way to bridge technically what you do and the passion you have for it to the desire that exists in the market. And if you can build that bridge in a way that builds trust, then you will make more solid, consistent, and managed connections and get far more out of it at the end of the day.
And you'll go home happier, inspired, not tired, and so will your staff.
Yeah. So one of the real bell ringers for us is understanding that, you know, the trust brand economy is what we believe is the next big thing for brands to consider. It is happening already. It's not a new movement. It's a reality. Brands that succeed and become preeminent understand the economy of trust as a strategic factor for their success. There is also the issue of the kind of generations that we have growing into our business world. You know, Gen Ys today are now taking management positions in organizations. You know, there are other generations growing to take the place of what was the Gen Y culture. If I look at my own children and the way they interact with technology, they step up to technology relationships with brands in a social media, in a direct access mindset, with complete trust that what is being presented at face value is the truth. But you only get one chance. You break that trust, they will move on, and they move as a herd. They don't move as individuals. You lose one, you lose many, and you lose them instantly. So the issue of trust brand economy is going to be a significant factor, and organizations who try and fake it until they make it will be found out. And if that happens, climbing back into a position of trust once it's lost is difficult. Trust and respect are the cornerstones of every brand relationship, and those two things must exist as an economy, and I believe are very much part of a new economy. So what would you say, Paul, is your, again, number one tip or recommendation for any brand that is building a trust brand agenda for the future? What do you think they need to look at first? What's the first thing they need to look at?
Build clarity, strategy. You need to be clear on who you're being in the marketplace, and you need all your people to be clear on it.
And expect them to be able to tell you how they understand it. Not just assume they've heard it once or see it stuck up on a wall somewhere in a frame, but actually have real conversations. You have to build trust internally between the stakeholders before you can deliver it externally. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And when you do that, our Tracy, who was making reservations, stopped going home thinking about how many sales she made. She went home thinking about how many people's holidays she made.
Yeah, which fulfilled her career, and added value to the corporate brand positioning in the market. Thank you very much, Paul.
My pleasure.
Talk to you soon. Thank you for joining me. You can find me at www.jackpelinski.com. That's Jack, PERLINSKI.com. And you can find me on Facebook and YouTube under Jack Pelinski. I look forward to connecting with you soon. And remember, choose to succeed.